Baby, it's a line. I chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you see it coming, no time to beg out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, be no doubt when you see you are. Grass makes heaven the middle of it. Grass makes heaven the middle. We are grass makes heaven.
The secret truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Buckner. We got our favorite guest out of Bristol, England. Welcome back to our program, Tony Gosling.
Hi, George. Sailing over the River Avon here, which is, of course, the river which John Cabot sailed along.
Okay.
When he supposedly discovered America. Of course, he didn't discover it. The Phoenicians had been there a long time before. Really, what Cabot's trip from Bristol to Newfoundland was really just a cover story. It was revealing to the world the fact that the elite knew where the New World was, and that they were preparing to exploit it by bringing people over there. So that's why I think Bristol's an interesting city, George, particularly. And you know, we were a temple of port in medieval times, and that's also framed our city. Bristol was for many years the second city in England, and of course, when it comes to naval power, it was a very important place too. It's lovely to be speaking to you from Bristol, particularly on the occasion of the return of the secret rulers of the world.
Oh my gosh, man, I tell you, that's something, huh? Well, you know, there's a big meeting over in D.C. now, Washington, D.C., of the rulers of the world, right?
Well, we do joke about it. And in fact, there was a BBC, no, sorry, I think it was a Channel 4 series. It was a documentary anyway, called The Secret Rulers of the World.
Okay.
Where it was done by, very good program actually, done by John Ronson, working with Jim Tucker, investigating the Bilderbergers. Well, it was done in a kind of jokey way. But he does a terrific style, John, because halfway through the documentary, although he thinks these people are crazy following the Bilderbergers,
right,
you can see he starts to realize, well, actually, this is quite frightening. You know, these people are following us. They're intimidating us. And actually, these people who are incredibly powerful seem to have almost a kind of, you know, their own little police state going around with them.
Right.
And it was, a very good documentary because it looked at both sides. First of all, banks are, you know, actually a very powerful organization that are unaccountable, but also that people can go over the top about them. And, of course, when we say secret rulers of the world, the secret bit, of course, is correct, but they do not rule the world. They would very much like to rule the world. And what they represent really is a political lobby, a very powerful one, interfacing between royalty, big business, and banking within the NATO countries. So it's not something that you'll ever see a Chinese face, at least representing the Chinese government at Bilderberg, because it's the political lobby for the NATO countries. And it's always been a place where these big business people meet up in order to, shall we say, sample potential new politicians. Are they on board? Are they good liars? You know, can they see that if they go along with what we want, they will become very famous? They will become very powerful. But actually, of course, all they're really looking for, George, is willing puppets to do what they want.
Right. They've got the government communications headquarters chief there, Jeremy Fleming, and they got our CIA director there. So they get a lot of intelligence people there, don't they?
Well, they certainly do. And it's an interesting surname, isn't it? The GCHQ guy echoes of Bond, James Bond, and Ian Fleming. But look, you know, this is the world that they are moving into with the National Security Agency around the corner and GCHQ at these meetings. Quite clearly, surveillance is a big part of this. And we're moving into a surveillance state. We've got laws being passed in the United States, other countries in Europe, Ireland, and here in Britain. We've got something at the moment called the Online Safety Bill, which is disabling, potentially going to disable the internet. It might mean the end of the age of the internet, the golden age, where we have freedom to publish and print what we want. Those sorts of laws are very concerning. But the surveillance system that's been built up by driving everybody, herding people onto the internet, George, is very frightening. Because, of course, when you hook up to the internet hooks up to you. And we're being encouraged to have smart this, that, and everything else so that the various signals through, whether it's 5G, 4G, wireless communications, one individual can hook up to almost any device in your home and download any of your private information. In fact, this was the main reason why Bill Gates got his break, because for the National Security Agency, he agreed to do what? To produce an operating system which the NSA could access at will. And that's how he started to make his money. Of course, there was a lot of people, powerful people backing that, so that they could also work closely to getting in there. So interesting to see who's there from the UK. Obviously, those are the people I'm most interested in. We've got some of the usual suspects, the boss of BP, the boss of Shell. These are the people who have made astronomical record profits.
Right.
Between profits now are roughly £50 billion. Now, I don't know what that is in dollars, probably $70-80 billion. This is profit, George. Now, these used to be, you know, figures for turnover, but they're now making those profits because, guess why? Because they can. They're price fixing, and they are just simply racking up the price to the consumer. Right around Europe and in the United States, in these NATO countries. I've always seen the Bilderberg as representing a kind of, you know, fascist system, effectively. That's the most worrying thing about it, is that they picked up a lot of the people from the end of the Second World War who were pro-Nazi. In fact, if you look at the first chairman of the Bilderbergers, that's Prince Bernhard of the Netherlands. He's a former SS officer. My good friend, Manfred Petrich, who anybody that went along to these Bilderberg conferences over the last decade or so, actually probably 20 years, may well have run into Manfred.
Right. You know, what I'm doing this year...
But Manfred did some...
Right. What I noticed this year that struck my fancy or my interest was there's a Denise... Hazabis, okay, Great Britain. He found.
Hang on, George. Let me finish my point.
Oh, okay.
Because one of the things that Manfred Petrich.
Okay.
He goes under the name as a free man on the internet. He did anyway.
Okay.
And he had a blog. His blog in German was called All Smoke and Mirrors, and it's well worth going through some of those and translating them into English. Brilliant guy. He was a former Swiss banker, and he had after 9/11 become a 9/11 truther and sort of joined our anti-Bilderberg club, I suppose. But he pointed out that the first few Bilderberg meetings back in the 1950s, if you have a look at the German participants, several of them were senior people in the Nazi government. There was one guy who was in charge of propaganda. for Joseph Goebbels within the government structure, their Department of Communications. And another guy who was one of the senior confiscators of Jewish possessions, of Jewish bank accounts in the 1930s and 1940s. So it was quite clear that there were very senior people from the Nazi regime in World War II were straight into the Bilderberg conferences in the 1950s under a Nazi SS officer. Now, the reason I say that is because it's taken, at the time, they didn't realize that we would ever have an internet, and they didn't realize that we would be able to research the backgrounds of these individuals at these Bilderberg conferences, because they believed that they had managed to keep their role in World War II and their role as Nazis hidden, and their political role as war criminals hidden, as racists hidden. And that's come out, and this is what I'm just trying to illustrate, that this really was a rebirth, a kind of recrudescence of much of the Nazi Party financial infrastructure after the war. And I think there was a certain uncomfortable feeling amongst many of the first attendees, such as Hugh Gaitskell, who was the leader of the British Labour Party. There are photographs of him looking rather uncomfortable at the conference. But they weren't quite sure why. And now we know it's because this was actually a kind of Fourth Reich Nazi operation right from the start, George.
Right. Well, Prince Bernhard was tied in the Nazis too. The paper clip, we've covered that in some of our previous interviews. And so we're all really understanding that before World War II, the American faction was helping bring, you know, Hitler to power, and they were investing in heavily into Germany and shipping and so forth. And so it's all about the money, isn't it, sometimes, huh?
Well, it is. And also, it's also, I think, we need to understand World War II as an attempt to create, it was almost like a trial run for a future regime. And the idea, of course, was that Adolf Hitler was like a man god. You know, he was the person everyone worshipped for bringing Germany out of this oppression, the financial disaster that had been created by the Treaty of Versailles after World War One. Now, you know, he was a kind of ranting guy. He was a very charismatic speaker. Many people say, I'm not sure I like his speeches myself, but this is the point to understand. This is a kind of trial run. The idea of creating this kind of economic disaster followed by a so-called savior, you know, a hero. And I think this is what we're going to be seeing when it comes to a Western economic collapse in the future too. So World War II, I think, was a bit of a trial run. As for now, one of the most important things to understand about Bilderberg now is we weren't sure if it was going to resurface, really, because so much of their work has been done in putting their place people into the most powerful political jobs in the Western world, in Europe most obviously, and in the United States. You know, their people basically are now running the show. It's a kind of mafia that succeeded in its task since the Second World War of making sure that their people are always the people at the very top in political power in the West.
Yeah.
But anyway, they are back. They are back, and it's interesting to see what there is on their agenda. And I think you wanted to just run through their agenda. The first thing to say, though, is the most important by far issue for the Bilderbergers, for NATO, in the NATO countries, and in the financial world in the West. Goldman Sachs and the rest of them, is one issue, and that is Ukraine. And that is, I noticed this straight away, they put it cheekily and in a very cynical way at the bottom of the agenda. It's not at the bottom of the agenda at this meeting. It's the most important topic they're discussing, because it is the most important topic facing the Western world, this showdown between these two systems. The Russians and the NATO countries, which all basically are now working in the NATO zone, in the European Union, Britain, and the United States, pretty much in lockstep to a command structure which is above our so-called political leaders.
Do you see the Anglo-American power bloc uncoupling from China, or what? What do you see?
Well, definitely. Although I think that at the highest level, the Kissinger sort of level, they will always be working very closely. I noticed the other year that the Americans are hiring out their spy satellites to the Chinese government for use on surveillance of the Uyghur Muslims in Xinjiang, for example. In fact, over the whole country. So although the West is bleating about, oh, isn't it terrible what China are doing to people in Xinjiang, putting them in these re-education camps, etc., at the same time, they're hoping that the journalists don't notice that they're hiring out their own satellite system for the Chinese to use for that very purpose. Now, if they had any principles, of course, they would stop doing that. But as usual, George, it's just about the money.
Yeah, right. They have several things in here that are actually, repeats. They are geopolitical alignment, China, Indo-Pacific realignment, Sino-U.S. tech competition. I mean, they're repeating themselves, it looks like, in here. But they have called in some Russian and some Chinese experts from the, security councils and so forth. And disinformation, that number 9 in here.
Yeah, well, hang on. There's one point there I don't want to miss.
Right.
That is Sino-U.S. tech.
Yeah, Sino-U.S. tech competition.
Very, very important.
What's that?
Yeah, massively important.
Well, the chips, there's a lot of chips being made.
Although the United States for many years was...
Well, there's a lot of chips being made in Taiwan, and China's knocking on their door with an imminent invasion of Taiwan.
Well, look, the Chinese are making chips too.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's just be clear about
but
it.
But they're not as far advanced as we are.
They're overtaking you. There is an enormous amount of effort going into China into catching up with this technology.
Right.
They have been looking at what's been happening with the Russians over the last few years, and China is well aware that at any point the US might cut trade off with them. And so they've been developing this. But look, the main problem, George, is that the US doesn't have the competitive edge anymore. You've got, and the same is true for Britain and much of Europe. Is we've got such high cost of living that it's very, very inefficient employing people. If you see what I mean? It's so expensive to employ people here in the West now with the housing costs, the fuel costs, the gas costs, the electricity costs, the food costs, and of course, as fuel has been going up in price.
Right.
It's every part of the economy. And so we are basically pricing ourselves out of these international markets, like the microchip market, the tech market, and the Chinese are
is it
competition.
Do you see,
they are bound to win?
Do you see?
They know it. I think we've really got to.
I see unrest in China among the public population. They're getting fed up with these lockdowns and so forth. That's why they had to ease up recently. I think the people were beginning to rebel against the government.
Of course they're getting fed up with the lockdowns, but there are reasons the Chinese government are doing this, which are not to do with COVID. Right. So first of all, the Chinese are extremely annoyed with the United States. For the mass boycott of Russia, and they're looking at themselves as being next in line. They're quite right; they would be next in line. And so, what they've been doing, I think, is using COVID and the Shanghai lockdown as an excuse to cut off trade. So they're saying, "Well, we're very sorry. You know that ship full of car part that was heading across the Pacific. Well, I'm afraid we can't send it now because we've got a lockdown in Shanghai.
Right.
So this is, I mean, I can't say this for sure, but looking at this, I think these lockdowns are now being used by the Chinese both to train their own forces and their own population in genuine biological warfare, because they believe that biological warfare may be over the horizon, coming soon, and they are genuinely wanting to do the very best to preserve the lives of their population, so they're training them up in how to survive a biological attack. And of course, I don't know how much you know about China's preparedness for nuclear attack, but they have all their major towns and cities where they've got shopping malls. Underneath the shopping malls, they've got proper nuclear bunkers. Nuclear bunkers with water supplies for months, with regularly replenished food supplies for months. China is ready to survive a nuclear war and to make sure that its population has the best chance to survive a nuclear war. I would like to see the same sort of preparation actually made here by our government. But they won't, because they don't really care about us, George.
Yeah.
They don't care if we die in a war.
Yeah.
They actually see much of the population here as a political problem to deal with. And they would rather we were out of the way.
They told us to get...
That's what I've got to say about the economic...
When we were in high school, they told us to get under our desk in case of a nuclear attack. Yeah.
That's right. Duck and cover.
Duck and cover. Boy, and they had these sirens go off in our city, too, around... They had all these big towers with sirens on there, and they had a monthly test, and you had to duck and cover.
This is very ironic, isn't it? Because we're probably closer to nuclear war now than we even were in the Cuban Missile Crisis. I don't know if you saw Frank Sturgis. He was chatting to people in Chicago, saying that, hey, guys, don't worry about this. They've already signed a deal with the Russians. And that actually, the Cuban Missile Crisis is a big international panic in order for the U.S. to save face after agreeing with the Russians to pull their missiles out of Turkey. If you remember, that was the cause of the Cuban Missile Crisis back in 1962.
Yeah, we agreed to pull them out of Turkey.
I think we're actually...
Yeah.
Yeah, before the Cuban Missile Crisis. So, but it would have been embarrassing for the U.S. to just do that. So they thought, we better have a bit of a big hoo-ha about it with the Russian boats coming over to Cuba. So they allowed that to carry on to the stage where they then said,
we kept the Soviet subs away from Cuba because we intercepted...
You knew they were going to pull those...
One of our units intercepted Morse code information and traffic between Moscow and Soviet subs steaming towards Cuba, and we stopped that. We found out early about it. And JFK phoned up Khrushchev and said, we're going to nuclear war if those subs continue. So we turned them back.
That's right. Well, this is why I think we're actually closer now.
I know.
There's
it's
a
dangerous.
Genuine,
just to talk about it is dangerous.
Genuine.
Yeah. Don't like
worry. It.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's important. I think it's important to talk about it because
we have to. Yeah.
You know what they've said, which they said they made absolutely clear: we will not use nuclear weapons unless the existence of Russia is threatened. And you can understand that. I mean, we had in the Second World War, we were preparing to use mustard gas on the beaches if the Germans invaded Britain.
Right.
You know.
Right.
So you go up a level. If your state is threatened, you may maybe the end of America, maybe the end of Britain or Russia, whatever.
Yeah.
And of course.
Yeah, as I understand it, the Russians used they're set up to use tactical nuclear. They're more evident in doing that or more receptive to doing that than we are. We've never really gotten a war effort with nuclear, micro nuclear or mini nukes. They're planning on using stuff like that and just normal.
I don't, I don't know about that, but I don't think they would use.
No, but they plan on that in their warfare, and we don't say.
If nuclear war.
Yeah. They plan on that in their nuclear war.
Well, of course, they always keep people guessing.
Yeah.
I mean,
but we're different. See, we're not playing that way.
They always keep people guessing.
No, we're not playing that way. But anyway.
Well, maybe, but look, the sort of targets they'd be hitting. A place like Suffolk here in the UK, where the US Air Force bases are, for example, Lakenheath and Mildenhall, possibly Fairford too, maybe Macrahanish up in Scotland. But the air bases which the US Air Force uses strategic air command for a launch pad into towards Ukraine or into Europe. Those are the sorts of places I think that the Russians would hit if they felt that Moscow was threatened like it was, you know, in the Second World War or under Napoleon. Because look, this is really a kind of Russophobia going on here, I think, still. And what I think one thing I must say about Ukraine, which they this is the sort of thing they won't like to hear at Bilderberg, is Michael Hudson, your excellent US economist, probably the greatest economist alive. He has just brought out a new book, which the Bilderbergers hate, and it's, well, I don't even, they try and ignore it. A bit like that he talk about, you know. So, this book is called The Destiny of Civilization. It's just out. Its subtitle is Finance Capitalism, Industrial Capitalism, or Socialism. And what he says in there is that the battle in Ukraine is really about a battle between two different systems. The dominance of bankers and banking and finance capitalism versus the old-fashioned mixed economy. Now, that's what we had in Britain after World War II, with much of our infrastructure nationalized, the water, the gas, you know, all these things, the transport, the buses, the trains. Everything here was privatized after World War II and at the end of the war. So that is the sort of mixed economy that the Russians favor, you know, the post-Soviet Russians, and also, of course, the Chinese. Because in China, banking is nationalized, all of their major infrastructure is nationalized, and, you know, that is not the case in the West. It's all been privatized. So Michael Hudson has made, I think, a very good argument in his book, and in his various interviews he's been doing, saying that actually what the Bilderbergers represent, this is me paraphrasing him, is this finance capitalism controlling politics, a planned economy by the fascists, by the corporatists, and, you know, because they laugh, don't they? They say, oh, we don't want a planned economy. They are planning the economy. Goldman Sachs is planning the economy. The Bank for International Settlements is planning the economy. And they're planning it in their own interests to bring more wealth and power to them. And so what Hudson argues is that it's really the battle in Ukraine of these two different systems. The one of finance capitalism, where they've got to constantly acquire new territory, more resources to then rent out to the rest of us, and the other system, which is a much more just system, and that just system is the Chinese, Russian system, and many other countries in the world have understood the state has got to run some of the most important infrastructure for the public good. Otherwise, it gets taken over by the rentiers, and your economy starts to collapse because you can't compete anymore. Everybody's paying all their money just to sort of, you know, the rent, the electricity, etc., just to stand still. And anyway, so that's, I think, Hudson's book is very important. But there's one other aspect of this Ukraine war which reflects on the Bilderbergers, and this is to do with secret societies, George, because the Russian Orthodox Church is a completely different system to the Catholics or the Protestants or the rest of the, you know, post-Orthodox world. The Russian Orthodox Church still has this thing called the oath crime. Now, the oath crime in the church means that if you have joined a secret society, and sworn an oath. It doesn't matter what it is. They could be, you know, Freemasonry. It could be a trade union if it's got an oath to swear. If you're discovered to have done this whilst you're a member of the Orthodox Church, you are forced to either renounce your oaths or else leave the church. So this is a very important thing in the Orthodox world, and it comes from Jesus' Sermon on the Mount, where he says simply, he says, never swear an oath. Simply let your yes be yes and your no be no. Anything else comes from the devil. And so the Orthodox Church and the Russian system, the Greek Orthodox Church, and actually some of Greek politics too, rejects this whole idea of people joining secret societies, whether it's a Chinese triad or a, you know, a US Freemason lodge or a British Freemason lodge or a satanic coven. Who knows, you know, black magic and things like that. That this is accepted in the West and it's allowed. In fact, in the US, even embraced as just another faith, because we allow freedom of worship and freedom of religion in the US. And that is another thing which they're fighting over in Ukraine. The difference between two different systems, a Russian Orthodox system and a Western system which embraces all faiths, all religions and secret societies. Yeah. So I just think that's quite an interesting way to look at it in the context of these Bilderbergers. Now, a bit on the back foot, actually, as the Russians are taking them on in the Donbass region of Ukraine.
Yeah, the Donbass is going to fall to the Russians. That's definitely going to happen, probably. They're going to take, and Russia will end up with the Donbass, looks like. Then they'll leave, probably. That's what I think. That'd be a conclusion.
Yeah, I mean, just to underline it.
Yeah.
Yeah, to underline it, Barroso is there at Bilderberg too. I noticed he has been made the chairman of Goldman Sachs.
Yes, he is. Yeah.
He's the former president.
Jose Manuel Barroso.
Of the EU.
That's right.
Yeah. He was the president of the European Union.
That's right.
So these are basically interchangeable roles. So, you know, look at what's been going on with the EU, which is basically Kissinger's creation, and various of his friends that created the European Union, George. I mean, a bit of a joke. I can remember at the Bilderberg 2016, just before the Brexit referendum in Dresden, we heard from some of the insiders in the conference that there was a big meal and that Ursula von der Leyen was sitting up next to Henry Kissinger at the top table.
Right.
So, you know, he's 99 now, but he's still an amazingly powerful guy.
Yes, he is.
So she then was the one to become the president of Europe. Isn't that funny?
Yeah.
Never elected. So this is the European system is basically a kind of, a Masonic, should we say, but certainly an unelected way of running the whole of Europe.
Yeah.
You know, something like 800
right.
million people
right.
being governed.
The guy right after Barroso.
Being governed by the system.
The guy on the list right after Barroso is Bodson, Valery, and he runs Amundi. Amundi is managing $2 trillion of investments. It's the largest investment company in Europe, according to. So it's all about the money again, isn't it, huh?
Well, that's right.
Right.
It is. Well, these companies now are beginning to own everything. And, of course, this is what Bilderberg represents. This is exactly what they represent, this finance capitalist system, which will buy up any competition, will destroy markets for its own benefit when it suits it, will price fix. And that is the system we're now living in.
Well,
Well,
here's one thing I've always tried to do, though. Well, I try to put forward crony capitalism versus a purer form of capitalism. See what I mean? And these people are crony capitalists.
Well, yes, but you see, Michael Hudson uses different terms. And I think in the economics world,
right.
You know, what you would call proper capitalism, he calls industrial capitalism.
Okay.
That is where states over the years, including the British during the days of empire, understand that you must have very cheap infrastructure in order to make sure that you can produce goods that will be competitive around the world. And also pay your workers well.
Right.
You know, so that they are happy workers that produce lots of stuff. And also so that they are spending the money that they're earning in your own economy. This was a basic thing they understood, and that is called industrial capitalism. But you're right. Finance capitalism is a kind of crony capitalism it's like a clique.
That's
that
right.
Just divide up the various markets amongst themselves, and anybody that's not in the clique and in one of their markets gets destroyed, George.
Oh.
Gets destroyed, bought up, bribed, or destroyed in another way.
I also wanted to touch on amyloidosis is occurring because of the spike protein. And amyloidosis is a string type of fiber that is created by misfolding of proteins caused by the spike protein, okay? Now, there is this Demis Hazapis that heads up the Deep Mind. He's at the Bilderberg. But I went out and I dug down into Deep Mind and found a program, an AI program, that can predict how proteins will fold themselves, okay? So I don't, and then you've got, you see what I'm trying to say here? If you can predict how they're going to fold, then you can make them misfold, can't you? See what I mean? So
the Bilderberg fingerprints, the Bilderberg fingerprints are all over the plandemic.
That's the point I'm making.
If you go to WikiSpooks, wonderful website, WikiSpooks.
Yeah.
Like, if you imagine if Wikipedia had good editors, you know. Anyway, WikiSpooks is doing a fantastic job. Their Bilderberg 2021 page has now got 140 Bilderbergers in key positions during the pandemic.
Right, right.
This was their operation, basically.
Right, and
for example, one of the people I met face to face,
Okay.
I'm just trying to remember her name.
Now.
She was running this CRISPR gene editing company.
Yes. I read her book, the one that invented that, CRISPR typed up. But, what I'm trying to make here is this amyloidosis comes.
Yeah, her name, just to give her name.
Okay.
She's Emmanuelle Charpentier.
Okay.
A very, very peculiar woman. I met her face to face.
Okay.
And, you know, she thinks she's a very powerful person, and she's a very wealthy person. She's in with the in crowd. The only thing is, the in crowd are gonna lose.
Right.
As Catherine Austin Fitz repeats many times, she said, this is a war on God. It's not just an attempt to acquire property around the world and power.
Right.
They are actually trying to undermine Christian civilization in the same way, George, as Adolf Hitler did back in the 19th.
Recently there was there was a data release, okay, a data dump by Pfizer recently, and I picked up about a 38-page data dump, and that amyloidosis shows up in that data dump 20 or 30 times. What it does, it causes different kinds of diseases within the different organs, okay, like it'll affect the heart or the liver.
Well, look, let's be absolutely clear. These injections are incredibly dangerous things to have. They're almost certainly going to cause autoimmune disease in later life.
Right, right.
And if they don't do that, they're causing all sorts of other problems. So, I mean, my advice is just don't have anything to do with them.
Exactly.
I mean, we should know this, shouldn't we, since they are still on their experiment. They haven't even finished their experimental trials until next year.
Right.
Anyway, George, listen, I'm going to have to go soon.
Okay.
I'm going to have to go soon. So have you got any final questions for me?
Oh, that's about it. I certainly appreciate you coming on and everything. Oh, there is an Erdogan. There is an Erdogan over there that's a professor of political science out of Istanbul University. Maybe it's Erdogan's brother or...
Isn't that...
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, that's it.
Yeah, Turkey.
Okay.
Turkey's role. Turkey. Turkey's role in NATO is not in an interesting role.
Yeah.
They're basically both in the Russian Federation and in NATO, Turkey,
right,
which is a very interesting role to have. It's become a very powerful country. I noticed that they've just shut the Bosphorus. They're not allowing any warships into the Bosphorus now,
Omar,
which is very significant.
The biggest.
But look, I just must say one thing about Mark Anderson
what?
Down at American Free Press. Mark has been doing, I think, a fantastic job in analysing and pulling apart what these guys are up to. He's been doing it for years.
Yeah.
And it's just really fantastic that there are journalists, that, still journalists around, like Jim Tucker,
right,
that have dedicated themselves to getting their heads around who these guys are, what they are. Let's just hope that next year, when the Bilderbergers return, if the Bilderbergers return, in Europe, probably, if they follow their own pattern, that we can find out where it is well beforehand, and make sure we make a bit of noise.
We'll go there together.
So that they don't find it.
Tony, we'll go together, okay?
We will, George.
Okay, well, thank you.
We will, George.
Okay.
Just to say, my website is thisweek.org.uk, where we covered Henry Kissinger, Mr. 99 years old, and his little Bilderberg conference on our latest show yesterday. And thank you very much, George, for inviting me on again.
Okay, Tony, thank you. You're great, man. Thank you a lot. Okay. Bye-bye.
Cheers, George. Bye.
Cheers. Bye-bye.
God bless.
God bless you. Bye-bye. Good night.